start. I think we should start with the fly. We should talk. We should tell the tale, or sing the ballad.
Sing the ballad. Okay, you sing the ballad.
No, I'm gonna tell the tale. Someone else can sing the ballad. There was a giant fly in
there
here.
There was a giant fly.
Are you gonna do that with everything we say?
Maybe.
You've already stopped.
Short-lived.
I hit it. I hit that thing maybe four times with a dishcloth, and it didn't phase it.
You attempted hitting it
times. Well, yeah. I mean, I missed it several times.
But you actually hit it. Like, normally you hit it once, and the thing is at least stunned.
Right.
But and that then thing kept flying.
Yeah.
True to its name, you know?
Lived up to what it said on the label.
Damn.
Kept flying.
That's what we're doing today? Fly puns?
Yeah, we can do fly puns.
Oh, I'm out.
It's all fly puns.
I'm terrible at puns.
It's gonna be a really good. It's gonna be a really fly episode though, man. You're gonna like it a lot.
It's real important to put fly puns in all of your games. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone knows that.
That's a GM tip from us to you.
This is really bugging me.
You did it.
Did I do it on purpose?
Though? I think you did.
I think you did.
Yeah, you did it.
I thought about it really long. There's gotta be one. Do it. You're a performer. Do it.
Oh.
But we killed the fly. That's the important thing. It took us about half an hour and way too much of our attention and time. But we did kill it.
We got him. I'm tired now.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
Although now I sort of have this whole fear that it is just merely waiting in the trash cans like a serial killer that's been quote unquote killed on camera, but sure. Just waiting for someone to get close and open the trash can so it can spring out.
It is October.
Fly into my mouth.
It is October.
It's very scary. Oh my god. We segued into what this episode is about.
Look, we almost did, and then you said segue, and that just ruins it.
No, I love ruining our segues. Yeah. I don't think there's been a single segue we've attempted that I haven't called out by name on accident.
All right, well, there it is. So welcome, everyone, to Experience Pointers Podcast. We are a trio of RPG gamers who are here to discuss different aspects of GMing and offer tips and suggestions for you to use in your games. I am Megan Caves, and to my right, we have...
Jordan Caves Callerman, no relation.
And I'm Grav Gulati, to his right.
Yep.
Also no relation.
And I'm yet. Yeah, that's the very important part. And I'm to everyone's left. And today, we're actually going to talk about using horror in RPGs.
Yeah, we figured it was the season for it. A lot of times around October, people are looking for... different ways to bring some horror or terror or spooky elements into their games. And we wanted to jump on that bandwagon.
Let's do it.
Oh, man, I love this stuff. I mean, I'm all about the horror right now.
Yeah, when I was a kid, Halloween was easily my favorite, most favorite holiday.
Has that changed?
It has. It's now Black Friday.
Black Friday is your favorite holiday?
Yeah.
Wow, what a cynical American experience just sort of like wrapped up in a couple of sentences right there.
Do you like
right
go shopping?
I love shopping year round, but Black Friday is
awful. You're an awful person.
I love it. I haven't done it as much in the past few years, but I still love it.
I stay indoors
it's more online now more than anything, but like back in the day when it was like the hustle and bustle of waking up at like midnight and waiting out, all the stores open at midnight now. They used to open at like 5 a.m., which I was like, oh, that's cool. But now it's like, we open at midnight. I'm like, what's the point? It doesn't make any sense. You didn't close.
They don't even really have the best deals on Black Friday, though.
Some places do.
But you don't go on Thanksgiving, right? Because they started doing that.
Oh, they did, yeah.
They open up on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, like I said, I've fallen out of it in recent years. I haven't done it as much because I usually like doing it with a group of friends. That's when it's the best.
So you're a non-practicing Black Friday celebrator.
Maybe this year. You guys want to go?
Nope!
Yeah, we 100% don't.
Listen, we used to work Black Fridays.
Yeah.
I did too.
Cool. Oh. And you still... Well, wow,
no,
okay.
No, I tried to avoid working it because I wanted to shop. But so I'd rather work on Thanksgiving when I worked.
Oh!
Wow, okay.
Which was actually worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's way worse.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
No. All right. Anyway,
so horror in RPGs.
Yeah, that was a
horror in RPGs.
Banter.
I thought it'd be cool if we started and maybe we each sort of shared a brief story of like some time when we either used horror as a GM in a game to great effect or as a player sometime we experienced a horrific game moment that really kind of worked and was firing on all cylinders and see what everyone had to say about that before we dove into some more specifics that other people can utilize.
I think so.
Good.
Well, actually, I've got one of the first experiences I had with it, and of course it was Jordan as GM. And I think I've actually brought this up before, but this was the first one that really jumped out at me. It was D&D, I believe, and it was me and one other player, and Jordan was GMing, and I don't even remember all of the specifics, but I just remember that we were at this monastery, and there was this crazy snowstorm, and he had this track that I had from a kid, from when I was a kid, that just terrified me.
She took it from a random child.
Wait, track as in like music?
Yeah, music.
Oh, okay.
No, it wasn't music. It was one of those weird like environmental moodscape things.
Okay. It was called Alpine Blizzard. The other side was this lovely little like rain sound that I would play at night to go to sleep, and then sometimes that tape would get flipped, and I'd go to turn it on, and I'd be like, because it was horrific. It was like moaning wind.
Yeah.
And then it sounded like there were like these cracks, like someone was like walking through the forest near you. It was nuts.
We'll get it in the show notes. We have to find it on YouTube and put it in the show
notes. Oh my god, I don't know if we could. It was on cassette.
It was on cassette,
it
yeah.
It was the least calming soundscape I have ever heard. You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to record it.
Yeah.
We have to, because it's horrific. Anyways. And anyway, so we basically were in this old abandoned monastery, and I believe it was a vampire that was, no? Okay, see, I don't even remember these details. Something was after us. Something bad that could pop into existence.
A wraith.
Okay, it was a wraith. And we found like this. Jordan lit some candles, and he turned out all the lights, and he played this horrible sound. And we found this frozen note that Jordan literally wet and put into the freezer that we found.
Oh, cool.
It was super cool. And it was just like, we were all so into it. And since this point, I mean, I've played a lot more horror games with Jordan, and he does a really, in my opinion, good job of making it creepy. But there was something he talked about that I didn't know at the time. But he's like, if you just start talking like this, then everyone gets down. It's like, okay, we have to be quiet. You know, there's this this crazy thing that happens, and it works. But I mean, I am not good at remembering details. I remember the way things felt. And I just remember... That was such a cool, not only did we like kill this wraith in the coolest way possible, the two of us, but also it was just such a cool experience. It just really stuck with me. Mm-hmm. So that was the first one. I've definitely had some others that were really horrible that I've done since then. But yeah, that stuck out.
How about you, Gruff?
The moment that I remember was fairly recent. Because I've been running Curse of Strahd for the past year.
Ooh.
And so their first meeting of Strahd was the moment that comes to mind. And basically what happened was they were traveling along a road, and they were looking...
Well, real quick, I guess if for those of you who are listening who might have no idea what Curse of Strahd is, Strahd is essentially a Dracula-esque vampire. He's like a super powerful vampire dude.
He's the dreadlord of Ravenloft, essentially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He owns an entire demiplane. And he has his whole backstory of how that happened and how he cursed himself into... basically, he can't leave either. He's stuck here forever. It's his own curse that he's stuck. And so while he's there, he just torments everything and everyone that's there for his own pleasure. Because he's going to live forever. So my player's first time meeting Strahd... And the book doesn't tell you exactly where you should meet them for the first time. They give you a lot of opportunities. But they tell you like basically find a good spot... And introduce him often. Don't have him sit in the background. Have him come and toy with the players. Hmm. And so this was maybe session 4 that they were traveling through Barovia, which is the land that this campaign takes place in. And they were traveling along a road, and they got to a bridge and were looking for a missing wizard that they thought was there. They were way off course. He was nowhere near there. But
typical players.
One of the players had a cat, and I had the cat run off one side of the bridge, not off the bridge, but like across the bridge, and jump into the arms of a man who started petting him. Ooh. And this cat was evil. This cat was like a beholder in disguise. Oh. So they were like, "Wait, what? This cat hates everybody." And this is when they met Strahd, and he was just being like super nice, like welcoming them to the realm, but they knew, like, they've heard so much about him. They were like, one of the players tried to be nice and charm him, and he was like, "That's cute, that's nice, that's adorable." Then one of the players was like, "I have this bottle of holy water, I'm gonna throw it at his face." I'm like, "Okay, yeah, nat 20 and I'm like, "No." And the reason they did this is because he wanted a girl who was traveling with them, not one of the players, as an NPC. And he was about to bite her. So they were like, I'm throwing it. Nat 20. I'm like, "Okay, you hit Strahd in the face with a bottle of holy water. He is effing pissed. He attacks you." And they're like 7 levels under him. There's no way. And so basically what he does is he immediately charms the dwarven fighter to jump off the bridge. He's like, "Go over there, jump off the bridge." And the wizard's like, "No, I web him so he doesn't do it." But he's trying to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he's laying waste to everybody else. So they're near death. at this point. One of them is down. Another one's trying to kill himself. And then he's like, all right, that was fun. See ya. And he just flies away. He does make the dwarf jump off the bridge, but he saves him and puts him back on top of the bridge. So he was just toying with them. But at the end of this, they were down, beaten, and then they were attacked by werewolves. Like, immediately. This guy earlier, who they just met, was like, hey, how's it going? By the way, here's my two friends. We're going to kill you. And that was the end of the session, nice. Too. That was a great way to end it.
Nice.
Wow.
So that was a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. You guys are actually hitting on a lot of the points that we were going to talk about, which is cool. So for me, a more recent one, actually. I had a recent episode of Wild Cards that I ran. I believe it was the fourth episode of this second season, where the first half of the episode was kind of like this big combat where you guys were trying to rescue an NPC, and then the second half was we had a guest player at the table, and his character was trying to find his lost sister. So you guys had tracked down the house, and you went to try and find it, and all the spooky stuff started happening, and then you realized eventually, like, this house wasn't real. It had been burned down a while ago, and all these people you were interacting with in the house were ghosts. Mm-hmm. But what I started doing, almost unconsciously at the table, and then I sort of went, oh, wow, this is really working. I should keep pushing this. I started utilizing, like, almost film-style editing techniques to keep a relentless pace on you guys, because you all got sort of spread out in the house and separated from each other. So I kept... one thing I am, whether you want to see it as a gift or not, I'm very good at continuing to run my mouth without stopping for long periods of time. Sometimes that works to my detriment, but in this particular thing, I was able to keep talking you guys through all of these descriptions of what was happening to you at a really frantic pace, and then basically jump cutting from one of you to another one, and then back around, and like keep this sort of relentless... assault on your players and on your characters, but also on your senses as players at the table, in order to up the tension and kind of make you feel like there was this breakneck pace that you guys had to meet and keep as well, that really just sort of started to set up this really nice cycle at the table and made all of these horrific or spooky descriptions that I was trying to put in there really kind of pop, I felt like.
Yeah.
And then eventually when there was the final like cathartic moment, I felt like it just sort of all exploded outwards, and it became this really cool emotional moment at the table where some of the players and characters ended up getting, I mean, almost legitimately emotional over what was happening. And that was a really cool experience. I hadn't tried something like that before, and it just sort of started to present itself in the moment. And it was fun to just follow that and see what happened.
Well, it was cool. Yeah, it was a super cool experience as a player in that game. Just that, like, that feeling of, like, I mean, yeah, it feels, I imagine most of us have seen a horror movie, and so we know exactly what you're talking about, and that feeling, even when you're watching it, of tension, and it's, like, going, and that was definitely there, which was cool. What I think is cool, too, just as, not a counterpoint exactly, but in contrast, because I've played in games with horror elements, with a GM who didn't do that. And I'm not saying that it wasn't good necessarily, but there was just this, like, you know, it's like, okay, all this stuff is happening. You know, it doesn't feel the same. Like, I can know in my head, okay, my character's in this horror setting, these gross things are happening, but there's something about just taking it up a level with sort of what you were saying that you did about using this, okay, I'm going to keep pushing at you, you know, like you said, GM to player, you know, that feeling of like, oh God, these things are happening fast. Whereas someone's going, okay, this stuff's happening, it's happening. And as a player, you can be like, okay, I guess we got to hurry. But it completely changes the feel at the table. Like, it's so much more immersive with just what you were talking about. Just that comparison is interesting to me.
And that is a great segue to the first point that we have about how to run horror at a table in a game. Because I will say, in my personal experience as a GM, one of the easiest but also most important elements to bringing not just the characters in the game session, but the players who are controlling those characters into the mood and tone is setting the right atmosphere at the table. So I personally am a big fan when I'm going to run a more horrific game session, like Megan was talking about with that one game several years ago that we played. I dim the lights. Candles are really effective. You don't want it to be annoying. You don't want it to be like, oh, it's too dark for me to see my character sheet. Like, I can't tell what my dice are rolling. But, like, just enough so to separate it from the normal, like, lighting setup in your place where you're playing. Mm-hmm. Candles are great for that. They add a really kind of ethereal effect with, like, the dancing shadow and stuff on the table. And then sound. Sound is a really, really crucial and I think underutilized part of games, especially for horror. Mm-hmm. We used that weird, creepy cassette mm-hmm. that you had with the Blizzard sounds. But the crappy thing about that was I had to keep getting up and going into the other room and rewinding the tape when it would run out. Which is why now I personally utilize and I'm a big fan of Wes Otis's tracks at Plate Mail Games.
He's got some good ones for that, too.
He has some really good horror tracks.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And some of them are specific sound effects. Like, there's one that I really want to use soon, and I will, called... I think it's called Howl of the Wendigo. And it's like up in a northern like forest environment, so there's all this sound of like the trees and the snow crunching and stuff like that, and then periodically there's just these weird sounds like from off in the distance in the woods.
Cool.
And it's all kinds of stuff like that. If you're just playing that in the background, like you can just be having a conversation with an NPC at the table, but there's all these elements that just sort of keep reminding the players at the table what to key into these scenes and to remember that they're not in a safe spot. That there's something like wrong going on
here.
About
using the five senses, or as many as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I did in my game when I was playing Curse of Strahd, I also used Wes Otis's Plate Mail Games tracks.
Cool.
And one thing I did was he has some sound effects. I believe I got them from him, where he has like thunder and lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I got it from him. And I use that. I have sound playing in the background, but then I like. On key moments, I play lightning when something like cool happens.
That's really cool.
And players remember that. And another thing to do, I use sound to kind of, I use sound to bring up NPCs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So each NPC has a theme song almost.
Oh, cool.
And that kind of, whenever they hear that sound, especially for when Strahd shows up, like when they start hearing this music, before I even introduce them into the scene, like they're like, oh no, I know what that sound means.
That's a really cool idea.
That's awesome.
You can use that for non-horror games too, but for horror games that works really well if you have a long campaign.
That's so great. And you see that in like movies too.
Exactly.
It's like,
oh
shit, this character.
When you hear a theme song, you're like, oh my god, this guy's showing up. It's cool. It could be scary. It could be like a victorious thing.
Well,
but like,
it's like in Jaws. There's a scene, it's just someone swimming in the ocean. You're like, it's fine. But then that like little starts and you're like, oh crap, the shark's nearby.
It's not fine.
I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. That, and even in like Doctor Who, everybody has a theme. The companions have a theme. And that's not even a scary instance, sort of like you're saying. And it's cool because... Or if you're like talking about that person or there's something like you can do that. That's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
Megan also mentioned like props at the table, and those are important, I think, in games in general. Now it's not something you want to do all the time, but if you can come up with like a small touch like that, like I was running that monastery adventure was a pre-written adventure that I adapted to run for our game, but it mentioned everything in the monastery was frozen over, and at one point they find a frozen note. And I was like, well, how cool would it be to actually make that note, get it wet, and just stick it in the freezer for a week and bring it out when it was time to play the game, so it's literally a frozen note that they have.
Yeah.
And clearly it worked, because that's the one thing you talk about from that adventure like all the time.
So
like,
cool.
Little pieces like that that you could just sort of like key them in. Because again, it's relatively easy to stress out the characters in a game. Like you were talking about with the Strahd encounter, where Strahd was just laying waste to them, and then immediately they get attacked by werewolves. It's like, oh, crap. There's that in-game tension of, like, our resources are depleted and we're really on the ropes here. But when you can also start to make the players at the table feel that kind of tension as well, that's when things really sort of start to, like, kick it up into the next gear. On the note of the senses, now, I haven't used these, but they seem really cool to me. There's a company called Adventure Sense, and we saw them at Gen Con this year. I think their website is adventuresense.com, like sense, S-C-E-N-T-S.
Yeah.
They have these little scent packets that are sort of like profiles of different in-game environments. So they have like fetid swamp or vampire's lair or horse stables or things like that that are literally a thing you open up and this odor comes out of it that sort of helps cue you into what's going on in the game world. And I think that's a really cool element.
And they smell really great. Like,
they're
really cool.
Except for the ones that are meant to smell bad, which smell
but
freaking awful.
But that's what I mean. Like, they smell great in that they're specific. And yes, they smell awful if it's like horse stable. And you're like, ah.
They feel authentic.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
And then one more note on that, like Megan was talking about. I don't know how I figured this out or when I started doing it, but If you just at the table sort of like just sort of lower your volume and the way that you're speaking, especially if you already have like this darkness mm-hmm. around you and like the candle set up and everything, you'll just notice almost instinctively your players will lean in to the table a bit more because A, they're trying to hear you, but also like they just start to like really sort of buy into the tone you're setting. And then if you continue to do it, they'll start sort of talking softer as well. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of use that to sort of sculpt like the roller coaster peaks and valleys mm-hmm. of tension in a game.
Yeah.
So like it's really great to start doing that in the build up to a tense or horrific moment to sort of cue them in, much like you were talking about with like theme songs or mm-hmm. stuff like that, that something is about to happen or things are about to get weird. Can be really cool.
You've done a lot of that too in the home game that Jordan runs. It's our Savage World Secret World game. And there was a time in which it's a modern setting, but we were like trying to watch overnight to see if some ghost or something appeared.
Oh, sure.
And there was this element of like, okay, we have to talk like this and be real soft. And anytime someone like talked louder, Jordan would be like, do you actually say it like that? You know, there was all that kind of that tension. And it was just this like waiting tension. It is really interesting. And while I do like horror, that's probably partly why they stick out to me. But those games, those instances stand out so much more to me than the other ones because they're just, I don't know, they make an impression.
Mm-hmm. The senses are very important. Another thing that I think is really, really important for setting up just this sort of horrific tone is start to make things slightly unnerving or disturbing or just off in the game in a way that your players start to pick up on but aren't sure that they're noticing.
Sure.
So an example of this in that Wild Cards game that I was talking about that I ran, before they realized the house was haunted, they showed up and it looked like this really nice country home, and there was a little boy that ran in and they met his dad who was very pleasant, and he invited them in to just kind of sit and share a meal with them. And he mentioned that his wife wasn't feeling well and she was upstairs and she'd be joining them shortly. And then they kept talking a little bit. They were trying to get information from him, and he was very genial and pleasant, but I kept having him mention that his wife wasn't feeling well and mm-hmm. she would be downstairs here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And at first it was like, okay, cool, yeah, thanks. And then it was like, yeah, we got it. And then it was like, why does he keep saying this?
Yeah.
And then as it kept happening, I would have him start saying it in a slightly more manic way, just almost compulsive. And then it started to become very clear that something was really wrong with this.
Yeah.
And little touches like that you can do to sort of make something dissonant in your game world so your players start to feel weird about something and where they're going like, what? Okay, why is this happening? What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Can really start to get them off of their comfortable foundation and into a place where they can be more easily affected by some of these other tension moments.
Yeah.
And I know we've been talking a lot about keeping things quiet and low and scary and spooky, but I also want to say that we shouldn't, in horror games especially, shy away from humor a thing to kind of punctuate those moments.
Absolutely.
I like having humor, and sometimes it happens without you trying.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But having humor in a game where it's supposed to be scary can be good, because then the scarier moments are even scarier, because it's, like you said, a roller coaster. It's ups and downs. And I had a moment in my game early on in Curse of Strahd, and this is sort of a spoiler early mm-hmm. on, so if you want to play Curse of Strahd, maybe skip ahead a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, there's they go into the town, the village of Barovia, and they meet a priest who lives in a chapel, and as soon as they walk in, they hear screams from underneath the church. And it's a voice going, "Father! Father, let me out!" And there's a priest at the altar just praying, and they're mm-hmm. like, "Do you hear that?" And he's like, "Yes, that's my son. He's been turned into a monster, and I've been praying for the gods to heal him, and hopefully they will." And he's like, "Well, how long has that been?" He's like, "Oh, it's been a year, and it hasn't happened, but I'm holding out hope." And they're like, "That's not going to work. So you have to deal with this, and what you're supposed to..." Well, you can do a lot of things, but basically they chose to go down there and to deal with it, to kill him, end his life, and, you know, free him from the shackles of being a vampire, essentially.
Yeah.
They did that. Basically, they opened the door and went down there, but it was really dark, and he darted out. He just mm-hmm. ran mm-hmm. past them. They eventually caught up, and they webbed him to the ground and just beat him until he died. And it was really, it was kind of funny and jokey, but they were just like, "Oh no, it's our first vampire encounter. Oh, we just webbed him, and he can't move, and he just dies."
Yeah.
his father came out and saw that, and he was like, well, thank you. That was awful. But later on that night, when they had the same priest do a burial for them, it got a little spooky, and then they went and got some rest. The next morning, they woke up, and they heard the church bell going off. And they're like, oh, no, something's wrong. And they went over there, and they found out it wasn't him ringing it, technically. They walked in, and he had hung himself from the church bell. And zombies were eating his corpse. Like, basically half his torso was gone. Whoa. And that's what was ringing the church bell. And they're like, oh, okay, that guy was real depressed after his son.
Crazy.
So that funny moment and then super down low moment.
Well, yeah, like, really great. Take a lesson from horror films. Like, you cannot keep that tension and anxiety and terror mounted for the entirety of a 3 to 4 hour game session.
Oh, no,
like, that's impossible. It's grueling. It's going to, like, break your spirit and the spirit of your players. Like, no one's going to be able to commit to that for that whole period of time. And it's counterintuitive. It's counterproductive. What you really want to do is find those moments to break the tension with some humor or just, like, some normal role-playing stuff. The whole thing doesn't have to be straight-up horror, but really pick and choose your moments where you really want to ratchet up the tension and the horror, and that makes it more effective overall because, again, you have those ups and downs.
The juxtaposition.
Kind of, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The juxtaposition between the normal, the humorous, and the terrifying, like, that's what a lot of, like, really good horror films use so well, and you can use that in your games, too.
And you see it, I mean, you sort of talked about this, but you see it, too, in horror films where it's, like, creepy thing in front of completely normal happy thing. You know, that's what's weird. The creepy thing by itself may not be that creepy, but it's the two together.
And that goes back to sort of that creating that sense of unease and unsettling. Like, going into a church where there's just, like, the serene, like, priest praying and hearing someone screaming from underground to be released. Totally. Like, that's that kind of thing. You're setting up that dissonant tone of, like, what the hell is going on here? Which is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so tension at the table. You break it with humor, you can break it with just normal stuff, but when you want to build it, using some of those elements, those sensory elements, setting up that sense of unease, and then getting, so like that particular instance you were talking about in our home game, of they were scoping out this building because they had heard there was maybe a ghost, and someone had hired them to check out and see if they were paranormal investigators, essentially.
Yeah.
So they were waiting downstairs, and I had them wait for a really long time. Now, I was playing a track from Wes that is like just sort of like this ambient sort of uneasy track. It wasn't anything in particular. And I just had them wait for a long time. And I would describe sort of the noises that were happening in the house, just like of it settling and stuff like that. And then eventually what happened was not what they expected at all. It wasn't a ghost. They saw the little girl of the family come downstairs just silently and walk past the place they were hiding and out of sight. And then they heard a back door open. And they heard her walk back, and she had the family dog by the collar and was walking it back to the middle of the room. And then while they all watched, she snapped its neck and then started, like, lapping the blood up out of its wound, like, right in front of there. Now, they couldn't see the front of her, so they weren't sure that it was the little girl. I let them know it looked like her, but they couldn't tell for sure in the darkness. So one of the characters decided he was going to sneak out of their hiding place and try and walk around the perimeter of the room and stay in the shadows to see if he could see her from the front. Mm-hmm. Now, that whole thing, like, I was having to make stealth rolls and all the normal, like, gameplay elements, but all of those things felt so much more impactful because he did not want this thing or whatever to see him.
Right.
But then, and this is something you want to use really, really sparingly, because really good horror movies will use these as well, but the best ones use it sparingly. You can use jump scares at your table.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend it, A, because it is effective when you do it right, and B, because it is so much fun as a GM. because not in that particular instance, but back to the Frozen Monastery, they would explore these rooms, and sometimes there would be corpses in there that were hidden that were designed to pop out at them if they explored certain areas. So the first time they went into, like, this coal furnace room, and there was a pile of coal, and they went over to investigate it. It was Megan's character, I believe, and she was sitting right next to me at the table. So I kind of did the thing where I set the tone, I got softer, I kind of was explaining the room, and when she went over there, I literally darted my arm out and grabbed her by the arm, like I did just now, and startled her. And I think she shouted out at the table, and that was how I instigated that fight. And then, from then on, when they started to explore other rooms, I would do that same sort of stuff, knowing full well there was no jump scare in here, but because they knew that might be a possibility, every time they explored anything after that, they were like, oh crap, is he going to try and startle us? Like, which becomes a real world thing that you're doing that feeds into the game world thing, and they sort of get mixed together in a weird way that your players get really involved in.
You're conditioning them.
Yes, yeah. Essentially, yeah.
Pavlovian response.
And I personally, now again, you have to do that sparingly. You cannot constantly be doing that. It wears thin.
Off your players.
Yeah, you're going to piss your players off. But if you can find one or two moments to do that, you can really kind of get under their skin for the rest of the game session. So do any of you guys have anything else that you want to add in particular about like horror elements in a game?
I don't think so.
Off of anything else that we talked about?
I think we covered it pretty well.
We covered a lot of points there.
Yeah, so those are some really good elements that you can bring into the game. But if you have also used something that we didn't talk about to great effect at a table, we'd love to hear about it. You can tweet it at us at @exppointerspod on Twitter. And we would love to see how you have used horror or experienced horror as a player in your games in an effective way.
I love this topic. It's so much fun. Yeah, I'd love to hear that stuff.
But yeah, I guess, should we move on to the question of the Sode?
Question of the Sode.
We should really think about getting a sound effect or something for that. But
that's a good idea.
We can do the poor man's version of it.
Okay.
So this one comes from the RPG subreddit. And the question, well, it's not a question. This is just the subject. Psychological tips for DMing. And this was submitted by user Ribble. What have you realized about how players think that you exploit as a game master? And they give a couple of examples of what they do. But I thought this was an interesting topic. And it sort of goes along with what we were talking about this session.
Sure.
What do you guys think? Like, what are some things that you have learned about the psychology of the other players at the table, or even of the game master, that that you can use to sort of influence the way the story goes at the table, or what do you guys think?
I have a player in my Curse of Strahd game who I found early on has a lust for power.
Okay.
And so it didn't start out as a Curse of Strahd campaign, but it turned into one eventually. So even early on, they were like, I want to be the most powerful character. Like, they didn't say that out loud, but like everything they did was like, I'm the best, me, me, me. And I'm like, okay, I guess. I don't think your team's going to like that, but sure. And then when they actually got to Barovia, there's lots of like gifts that you can get that are offers from dark forces.
Yeah.
From dark beings from above. And even Strahd himself will offer you to take his place. He's essentially looking for someone to take his place. That's what he wants. So whenever he meets the player, he's like, which one of you? And like immediately he was that player. Like they didn't even like hesitate. Like me, I'll do it. And they're like, what? Why? They're like, no, it's okay. I'll just, you know, I'll be a nice one. And I'm like, what?
I'll be a nice evil overlord.
But yeah, they've been receiving dark gifts as offers from beings. And every time I'm like, there's a price to pay for this. Like, that's fine. I'm like, okay, you smell like garbage for this first one. But you can use this really high level spell. Like, yes, this is what I wanted. So anytime they're in a social encounter, they're like, what is that? What? Who is? Ew. And then after that, I was like, okay, here's another one. You can never be surprised again. And they're like, that's great. You grow a second face on the back of your head that sometimes speaks. And they're like, that's not as great. But I like it. I'm like, okay. Wow. It's just going to get weirder from here. Wow. You keep accepting these. So I'm exploiting that lust of power to make more interesting narrative things happen in my game.
I mean, you're basically like that player is turning themselves into a monster.
They really are.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah. That's interesting. A really easy one that I think a lot of people use effectively, and it's in a lot of adventure design, is the one of these things is not like the other thing. Like, you come into a room, every door is closed except for one that's standing open, and it's like, okay, well, obviously, that's the thing we want to go and investigate. It's the one thing that's different. But you also have to be careful about that when you're running a game, because you can accidentally make something seem way more important than you meant it to just by describing a detail about it.
Yep.
So that's...
I did that.
You did when you were running your game. You described...
We talked about that last time.
But that's a really interesting one that I think you can use to your advantage, but you also have to be careful that you don't get used by that one, because then you can be like, oh, crap. Now I have to come up with a backstory for this tin can that they found because I mentioned it as just a random piece of junk that was in the room, but they're sure it's a magical tin can of some kind.
Yeah. I have not had the experience as a GM to really think of that as much. And as a player, I don't know. I don't know that there's anything that... I assume that there are subconscious things.
Well, I mean,
definitely.
Are there things you find yourself responding to that, like, you sort of almost know... are manipulative, well, not manipulative, but like intentional in some way.
Yeah. this is actually a question for Jordan to answer, as in, what have you exploited on Megan as a player? Because you probably have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so because Megan is my wife, and because...
Oh, we are related.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, by marriage.
Don't rub it in.
sorry, Garof. She always plays in all of my games, and I can never talk to her about anything that I'm playing. And it's super frustrating because I just want to be able to tell someone, like, I'm doing this weird thing. Isn't that cool?
I'm sorry I play in all your games.
Instead, I end up talking to her sometimes, and I'll, like, drop hints about things. But then at the table, when we're playing the game, I'll see her make a connection that doesn't exist. But she'll just assume, like, oh, you were talking about, like, how sometimes undead do this, and now I see this thing, so I know what's going on here. And I'm like, oh, okay, she thinks she knows what's going on here, but she doesn't. So now I can continue to drop red herring clues and make her go off in a total different direction.
So you're using my metagame brain that I try to avoid, is what
you're
saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, using metagame knowledge
it's hard.
Against players, and I am never in favor of an adversarial GM-player relationship, but sometimes... If your players are intent on metagaming and you want to break them of that, you can use situations that seem like common things, like, oh, okay, we're going to fight a troll, we got to use fire to keep it from regenerating, stuff like that.
Right.
But maybe it's not actually a troll. All these people who saw it thought it was a troll, so they're going in like, great, even though we've never encountered a troll before, we as players know we need fire scrolls, burning hands, flaming swords, and it's like, whoops, it wasn't a troll, it was an Ettin. Like, what are you gonna do now? Like, you prepped for the wrong thing. You can use that kind of player knowledge to distract them or set them off on a different path. You just don't want to do that too often. You don't want to do it punitively. You don't want to do it in a way where your players don't trust you. But it can be fun sometimes to kind of take something that they see as a given and sort of turn it on its head.
You're talking about almost playing with expectations.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
To make an interesting story.
Because, I mean, unless you have a group of entirely brand new players, everyone's going to come to the table with some preconceived ideas about what an RPG is or what's going to happen in it. And you, if you know those things, you can use them to fun effect at the table, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
So do we hit some elements of that?
I think we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
I think we did.
Okay. Well, maybe we should wrap it up a little bit.
Why are we getting so high?
We'll use our upper registers and we'll...
Okay, that's going to be real annoying.
No one's
going to
like that.
All right.
So why don't we tell everyone where they can find us?
Yeah, well, you guys can find us, as we said earlier, on Twitter at @ExpPointersPod. And please, like, if you have questions you want us to talk about or whatever, we might do them for the question of the show. So tweet at us things.
We're always looking for new ideas and stuff to center an episode around. So if you have some questions or about things that you want to implement in your game or things you feel like you want to know how to do better, send them to us.
Yeah, and you can find us on iTunes. We're on Google Play. Mm-hmm. You can find us on our Audio Boom page. And please subscribe, review us. All that really helps keep us up on the charts so that other people can find us.
Yeah, if you want to support us, that is the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Leave us a nice review or rating and it helps other people find us.
Yeah.
Or not nice. I want an honest review.
Yeah, give us an honest feedback.
I want some honest feedback.
Unless we suck. I mean, but only if you think that.
Oh.
but you know, like, couch it in a way like a compliment sandwich, though. That's what we would appreciate.
Yeah,
sure.
But you can find me on Megan Caves again. You can find me on Twitter at Megan Caves, MEGHANCAVES. I am also on lots of things over at Saving Throw Show, which is on Twitch. You can watch me on Wild Cards, which is a show we were talking about that Jordan runs. All three of us are on that, actually, on Friday nights at 8 p.m.
That's right.
Pacific.
And by the time this goes live, you'll also be on Iron Keep.
I will. I'm going to be on Iron Keep for a little while, which is our D&D 5e game on Saving Throw at on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. And Garab is also in that.
Yeah.
Which is fun. And then you can watch Jordan and I right now. We're doing the Spookaganza, which is our, we play spooky video games on Mondays at 4 p.m., and I don't know, man, all these things.
Yeah, all those things. My name is Jordan Callerman, Jordan Caves Callerman, but on Twitter you can find me at Jordan Callerman. That's JORDANCALLARMAN.
And you have to type it like that.
Yeah, you have to sing that to yourself while you're typing it in. But yeah, hit me up if you have any specific questions or comments or anything there. And you can also find us, or me, on Friday nights at 8 p.m. on Saving Throw. I run Wild Cards, which is our Deadlands Reloaded Savage World show, and both Megan and Garav are players in that game now. Mm-hmm. So check it out.
Yeah. Cool. I'm Garav, and you can find me on Twitter at DoubleGXG. That's the word double, then GXG. And you can also find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/DoubleGXG. And you guys already said Iron Keep and Wild Cards. I'm not going to repeat it.
Okay.
Sound like a broken record. Okay. I don't want to do that.
Okay.
I'm a humble person. But yeah, that's the episode. Have a happy Halloween, everybody.
Yes. Yeah. And if throughout this episode you heard the buzzing EVP of a dead fly, know that that is the fly that we killed before this episode started that has returned from beyond the pale to haunt us.
It will haunt Saving Throw Show forever.
I'm not opening that trash can. I'm just saying. I'm going to let someone else do it. I'm going to make Dom do it.
Dom's going to do it.
He's outside. He's waiting.
See you next time, guys.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.